I think we've got a quorum here, so I'll call the meeting to order.
Okay, they want me talking to a mic. Seems that we have a quorum and the meeting's in order. And with the minutes, I'm sure Representative Haas has looked at them very well. And
thank you. I'd move the minutes.
Thank you. All those in favor of moving the minutes as written, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Ayes have it. All right. We have a second set? No.
Yeah.
All right. We are going to have kind of the same format as we had yesterday. We're going to have a bit of a conversation with their testifier, and then we've got a bill to hear after that. So, Mr. Vickers from the State Board of Investment is with us this morning to kind of give us an overview of the State Board of Investment and the venture capital activities, and hopefully tell us how many jobs that goes along with that in the state of Minnesota. And when all these VC people call us up and say they're not doing enough, we can say this is what we are doing. So without any further business before the committee, I'll ask you to introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Howard Bicker. I'm the director of the State Board of Investment. What I thought I'd do this morning was do a quick overview of the State Board of Investment and some of our background, and then talk a little bit about our alternative investment program, and then stand for any questions you all may have. First of all, the State Board of Investment, the board is the four statewide elected officials. The governor is the chairman of the board. The other three members are the attorney general, the state auditor, and the secretary of state. We have an investment advisory council that advises both the staff and the board on various investment-related policies. This committee is made up of 10 people from the local investment community. It's also comprised of the three directors of the statewide retirement system, the commissioner of finance, and then the governor appoints two active employees and one retiree. I have a staff of 22, and we are currently responsible for investing approximately $63 billion. Most of the assets
Can I interrupt just a moment? I haven't said this in the committee, but you know the buzzing that we hear generally is from cell phones. So if you have your cell phone on, and I'm now going to check mine, please turn them off so we don't get the buzzing.
God, I thought it was my hearing.
I'm
Okay, I think we're ready. So if you could proceed,
Mr. Chairman and members, with the market these days, I'm kind of used to this buzzing in my ears. So, the majority of the assets of the State Board of Investment is responsible for our retirement-related assets, and I think most people assume that that's basically what we do. About $55 billion of the assets that we invest are retirement-related. But in addition to the retirement-related assets, we invest a number of other accounts, Environmental Trust Fund, which is the proceeds from the state lottery. We do the Permanent School Fund, Assigned Risk Plan, which is part of the state's workers' comp. We do the General Fund, the Highway Fund, Housing Finance, Debt Service, and we do a number of other individual accounts. Now, today's topic is more private equity. For the retirement-related assets, we have basically two funds, one for retired lives and for active lives. When you aggregate those, we have an asset allocation for our retirement-related assets of approximately 45% in domestic equities, 15% international equities, around 24% in bonds, 14% in what we call alternative investments, which are venture capital, private equity, oil and gas, mezzanine debt. and then approximately 2% in cash. Now, today's topic is really alternative investments, and we have a couple of statutory requirements as it relates to our alternative investments. First of all, our alternative investments are almost always in the form of limited partnerships. We do limited partnerships to control our liability. In other words, we don't want to have contingent liability. If you're a limited partner, you're limited to the amount of commitments that you make to an individual fund. In addition to that, law requires that each partnership that we enter into must have at least four other investors who are investing under the same terms that we're in, and that we can be no more than 20% of any individual partnership. Now, there's been some discussion about what we have done, and this sheet, I believe, has been handed out to the committee. And you can see these are various partnerships that we have invested in that have either a headquarters or an office in the state of Minnesota. And you can see that's a list that we've done over the years. We have consistently done partnerships with opportunities within the state. On page 3, the last page, you can see also there are a number of funds that we have invested in that are headquartered here, but have also done investments in the state of Minnesota. And, you know, we're from Minnesota. We understand that. I was born and raised in Winona. You know, these winters are getting tougher and tougher to get through, but we keep trying. And we've always operated under the premise, all things being equal, we'll do it here. And that we knew not only for private equity venture capital, but for a number of other things. So we try to support Minnesota as much as we can within the fiduciary responsibilities the board has. And our fiduciary responsibility is very straightforward and very much stipulated in statute that we invest solely for the benefit of the pension. And Mr. Chairman and members, that's a very quick overview of the State Board of Investment. I think you can see that we've done a number of deals in Minnesota. And I'll gladly respond to any questions you may have.
Thank you. Does the committee have any questions? Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What portion of your alternative investments is this Minnesota component? Well, two questions. One is, what portion is the alternative ones in your overall portfolio of the $60 billion plus? And secondly, what portion of the alternative ones is this Minnesota component?
Mr. Chairman and Representative, we have alternative asset allocation of approximately 14%. We are not to that target, but we are getting pretty close. Mm-hmm. Of that target, I have really not done the math, how much is in Minnesota, but I would guess somewhere around 5% of our program is in Minnesota, or at least has, quote-unquote, headquarters here. We don't track each individual investment because there's both, however you want to look at it, but we do have commitments to Minnesota.
Paul?
Sure.
You said you do not track it. Do you have the capability to track it if you desire to?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we would, after the fact, have some ability to do some tracking. You know, the legislation that's in front of the committee today talks about a number of reviews by auditors and whatnot. I can tell you very frankly that the vast majority, if not all, venture capitalists, if that was a requirement, we would not be able to invest with them. These venture capitalists are very, very, for lack of a better word, paranoid about how they invest their money. They have a lot of trade secrets, and they want to know what's going on, and when you're going to go to market, and so on and so forth. And if that had to be part of the quote-unquote partnership, they would say thank you, but no thank you, we don't need your money.
Another quick call follow-up on the 14% target figure. What percent are you actually at?
Madam Chair, Representative, I think we're about 11.5.
Okay. Thank you.
Any questions? I have a couple of them. you've talked about, you know, you have a variety of funds, the Environmental Trust Fund, the Workers' Comp Fund. Other than the actual pension, and I think you might have mentioned it, that I, bad hearing, buzzing in the ears, you know. What makes up the actual pension and what makes up all the others, percentage-wise? Because I think, from what I've read, you have approximately $63 billion in assets in the fund.
Mr. Chairman and members, again, we have slightly over $63 billion in total assets, approximately $56 billion of those are retirement-related assets. The majority of the other assets are generally cash kind of accounts because of the nature of the money. Like the general revenue fund, you know, we're not putting that in long-term investments. That's short-term money market to pay the state's bills. Environmental Trust Fund, on the other side, does have some longer-term investments because they have a long-term time horizon and basically run like an endowment fund. But the majority of the assets that are not pension-related are generally pretty short-term cash accounts, and we run those, for the most part, internally.
Mr. Vickers, if the Environmental Trust Fund is long-term, is that $500 million or $1 billion or?
The Environmental Trust Fund is approximately $500 million.
Mm-hmm.
The Permanent School Fund, which also has a equity component, is around $700 million. The General Fund, which is the state's general monies, the highway funds and whatnot, is about $5.5 billion. And that's basically a money market fund.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a quick question. I may have missed it, but on the last page, you have the out-of-state companies that you invest with, but no dollar amount. Do you have can you just roughly tell us of the amount that you spend, how much goes into these out-of-state partnerships?
Mr. Chairman, how much do we commit to these, or how much do they put in Minnesota?
How much do you, well, both, if you can give it to me.
Well, again, the some of these partnerships are really very large partnerships. KKR Millennium Fund, for example, I know we committed around $200 million to that fund. I don't have the exact numbers for the other ones, but most of them are $50 to $100 million type. Their investments that we can see so far that we know in Minnesota are between $50 and $100 million.
And did you have that? I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, if I could continue.
Go right ahead.
And of that, how much of it came back to Minnesota? Did you have that? You suggested
it's between $50 and $100 million.
It was. That's what came back. Okay, thank you very much.
Representative Winkler?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I guess I won't necessarily have a chance to ask questions when I'm presenting a bill.
No.
So
no.
Maybe now would be a
good time.
We get
to ask you.
I guess what I'm... The intent of the reporting section of the bill as drafted was simply to get a report or information about the economic impact, specifically in the high-tech field, of the State Board of Investment in the Minnesota venture capital sector. And I certainly would be open to anything that the statutory language, or if you do existing reports, or if we could simply request that the reports be sent to this committee in statute, but some kind of information that would provide better sense of the economic impact of those investments, and I have a bunch of other states to do something similar. I don't know what kind of reports you do in that regard, but certainly there is no desire to have a poison pill in your venture capital investment relationship.
Before you go too far, I want you to know he's probably the friendliest guy on the committee for you. He's a venture. He works in one of those startups.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, again, we are, at the State Board of Investment, more than willing to provide information. I mean, if anything, we probably accuse the publishing too much stuff. The reality is, though, and it's getting worse, is that the majority of what you would call seasoned long-term venture capitalists, if there is anything on the books, whether it's statute or board policy or whatever, that could be construed by them that auditors or somebody else could get inside their network. They will very kindly say thank you, but no thank you. I mean, just a good example is Sequoia. Probably everybody, if you're in the venture capital business, you've heard of Sequoia. Sequoia, for example, just did Google. Okay. University of California, and I know some people there, and the University of Minnesota both were in Sequoia. And they've been there historically. Sequoia will no longer let either one of them invest. Because they are public entities. And they will not even consider. And California, University of Minnesota has probably even more protection, quote unquote, than I do. It's a state. So, and again, I don't want to be obstructionist. I mean, I'm just telling you the realities of the world. You know, can we tell you after the funds have matured and we've gotten all of our money back and the fund has ended, we probably can do some work then and see a little bit about, you know, how many jobs are created and so on and so forth. But again, they're going to proceed. And they, I mean the venture capitalists, for the most part, are going to say, well, if you can do it after the fact, who's saying you can't do it before the fact? I would like to be able to tell you exactly how many jobs were created or whatever. First of all, the State Board of Investment, and don't take this the wrong way, is not really in the economic development business. We're in the trying to make money business. But again, all things being equal, we try to do it here. And hopefully, because of some of our efforts, there are additional benefits to the state. We try to work that way. We work that way as hard as we can. Within the flexibility and legal parameters of the State Board of Investment. But if there was a statute on the books that said that we had to disclose all of this information, many of your prime venture capitalists will walk. It's as simple as that. And, you know, I don't like it. I don't set the rules. They set the rules. And unfortunately, when we started in this, we were in the mid-80s, and we could probably dictate some rules. Now, everybody's tripping over themselves to spend money in these areas. And the big funds, the good funds, the funds that have been around for a long time, don't need us. It's unfortunate, but they don't need us. So if we want to make money, and, you know, private equity for the last 10 years, in our private equity portfolio, we have compounded net to us at around 17% per annum. It's been a very successful program for the State Board of Investment. We've made a lot of money. We get nervous if there is going to be the potential that we won't be able to reinvest with some of these organizations that we have been with for a long period of time. And I understand exactly where you're coming from, and I don't disagree with what you're doing. It's just going to be a problem for us. If it's in statute, they don't need us. People, a number of public funds, and for that matter even some corporate plans, who did not play an alternative investment, are starting. They've been tripping over themselves since the early 2000s, and they got a lot of money. And if we want to play, we got to play by, unfortunately, by their rules, to the degree that we can. So, Mr. Chairman and members, that's the reality.
It's obviously too bad that we can't get 50 states to decide to not play by their rules and all play in the same sandbox, so to speak.
Mr. Chairman, if the states all did that, they wouldn't care. They'd still get it from the endowments, foundations, and corporations.
There's a number of people. I'm going to ask this particular question and then get a follow-up from this. Why don't you follow up? Go ahead, and then I'll ask mine.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I guess then, I mean, I understand your point very clearly. Mm-hmm. I guess the question is, at some level, what your investments have to report back information to the people who are depending on you, the pension boards, etc. What level of information do you report or can you report as a matter of public records.
What we have as a public record is the following. Who we invest with, how much money we invested with them, the returns on those assets, market value of those assets. We cannot disclose the underlying information of the individual portfolio companies.
Not even the identity of the company.
We have to be very careful about what we can report. That's correct.
I said that's a fairly dire market reality that we're dealing with.
I'm going to ask mine, and then I'm going to go on to Representative Thiessen. I have to say I've been reading more than I care to about venture capitalists over the last year, and just recently I came across, in preparation for this bill, kind of a description of what California has to do, an impact statement with how their funds impact the state of California, but including the number of jobs that they create. Now, having said that, if a committee asked you, without putting it into statute, you provide that on a yearly basis, does that interfere with what these larger funds would say is too much regulation?
Mr. Chairman, we could probably provide you with some data as it related to individual companies within a private equity portfolio after that company went public and we got our distribution. In other words, we got our equity or cash back. In the sense that that fund or that piece of that fund has now been closed. There's no longer, it's all public because it has gone public. And then you would know whether, you know, a new Medtronic is sitting out there, whether it's got 50 jobs or 150 jobs or 1,000 jobs. The reality is most of the jobs created in a lot of these companies are in years after we've gone public. I mean, you know, the initial round, so to speak, is when you're getting this company up and going, and, you know, if we would have been fortunate to be in Medtronic or St. Jude or whatever around here, we would have probably reported 150 jobs instead of whatever Medtronic has now out at their campus. Again, I don't mean to be evasive about this. We can probably provide you with some level of information as to how many jobs have been created by the venture capitalists that we've invested in. But it would be after the fact, and again, I don't know how much information would be provided, but we'd be more than willing to give it a try.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How are you?
Good morning.
I should know this, but what is your total asset management?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thiessen, about $63.5 billion.
$63.5 billion?
Yeah.
Okay. So 1% is $630 million, or is it $63 million?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thiessen, I think the
proposed
legislation is 1% of our private equity portfolio.
Okay, and how much?
And our private equity portfolio right now is approximately $6 billion, somewhere around there. So 1% of that would be $60
million. $60 million.
And we have more than that already in the Minnesota Venture Capital Group.
Okay. And one other question, Mr. Chair, kind of going to the point that you were making. I mean, would another way to get at some of this instead of reporting be possibly to put to think about your investment decisions up front and what you'd be looking at in terms of how you'd have to invest it so it wouldn't get back, but you would do that analysis up front?
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Thiessen, our analysis is whether this limited partnership that we are looking at can make some money for us. And if there are two of them and both of them are pretty good, and one's in Minnesota and one's in Menlo Park, we'll probably do the one in Minnesota. But if the one in Menlo Park is a heck of a lot better than the one in Minnesota, we're going to do the one in Menlo Park. So, you know, what we do, and the reality is you talk to these venture capitalists, and they all share deals anyhow. You know, the organizations here and the organizations in California and the ones out in Route 128 in Boston, they all do the same deals. I should say they all do. But they share deals. I mean, they you know, everybody gets in everybody else's deal to varying degrees. So just because they're headquartered here or have an office here doesn't mean they're going to do their deals here. You know, because you know, we're in a buy a fund in New York. I mean, they just put, I think it was, I don't know, it was a big number in a couple of local deals, $40, $50 million. You know, and that's bigger than a lot of the local venture capital funds that are in aggregate. So, you know, it's, again, I don't want to come across as being anti any of this. I'm not. But it's really tough to track. Just because it's here, it means the jobs here. It could be, if you put money in something in New York, could be more jobs here than if you don't. The reality is again, I think we have a pretty good record about making investments within the infrastructure within the state of Minnesota to the degree we can. There are venture capital organizations in Minnesota that we haven't invested in. But and that's for various reasons. You know, they're either startups or whatever, or have had some other issues. And some of the ones that we've invested in have had some issues. You know, venture capital hasn't been a fun place to be for most of the 2000s. You know, after the dot-com bubble in 2000, it was pretty ugly out there for quite a while. But you know, we've tried to do what we can, and we will continue.
And can I just ask one other?
Sure.
This is more out of ignorance, or I should maybe know this too, but when we're talking private equity, that what are we defining within the term private equity? Does that include, you know, hedge funds and include venture capital funds? And what are we talking about exactly? And we're talking, well, Blackstone is public now, I guess, but is it those kind of groups as well?
Mr. Chairman and Representative, at least for us, we have what we call alternative investments, which we haven't targeted. We include in that venture capital, private equity, some oil and gas investments, some mezzanine debt, and we even do a little bit of real estate. Not a lot, but we do some. As far as what we would define as private equity / venture, it's equity ownership of a company. Yeah, we do the mezz debt stuff, which is basically financing the debt side of somebody going public or transitioning from private to public. And we have done some oil and gas stuff. We're not drilling oil in the ground someplace. We're basically usually proven reserves, whatnot. And obviously that's been very successful over the last few years. The trouble is, most of the oil and gas world is not set up for people like us to invest in. It's the good old boys in Texas kind of stuff. So.
Thank you.
Representative Mason?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Becker, I think you've already answered my question, but just let me say this to make sure I am understanding it. When it comes to investing in what I would consider Minnesota companies, the deal is, if they're pretty close, you'd invest in Minnesota. But if it's not, you're going to take the out-of-state company.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, that's correct. And also, I mean, the reality is Minnesota's venture capital community is pretty robust. I mean, it's a pretty good community. Minnesota has a history of medical devices. The medical device industry has been very strong here. The Medtronics, you name it. So we have done a lot of those deals, but we also have a lot of money to spend. So we look at a lot of deals elsewhere, and we have done deals all over the country, and we'll continue to do deals all over the country. But in our due diligence process, as we continue to look, there has been, to my knowledge, no Minnesota venture organization or private equity organization that hasn't had an opportunity if they want to come in our door. We will listen to everybody. Now, some have gotten funded, some of them haven't. And again, you know, those who haven't got funded, I'm sure, are not my friends. Whatever. You know, our jokes are very funny when we say yes, and our jokes aren't very funny when we say no. But, you know, we get paid to say no. So, and again, I think our record is pretty good as a company.
Representative Fun, did you have another question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. so you testified that of the 11.5% target or alternative assets that you currently have of your total portfolio, that 5% of that then, a small number, is in these alternative investments in Minnesota. So 95% of it is in Silicon Valley, Boston, or wherever else it's going around the country, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Chair, because I'm a little under the weather weather-wise this week, so I'm not sure if my mental cases are up to speed today, but I believe we heard testimony yesterday that there are examples out there where we have invested our pension, this fund money, in venture groups in other states, and then Minnesota firms have, startups have attempted to get access to that venture capital, and they were told they could, on condition of moving to the other state, if they moved to California, it would be available. If not, they stayed in Minnesota, it wouldn't be. So that's an angle, I think, that was brought to our attention. Am I saying that correctly? And so I just wanted to hear your comment on that. I think that's stuff to get a handle on, data and otherwise. But I think that's kind of concern, because if through your fund or through other venture funds in Minnesota, we could, you know, not make that happen. I mean, those kind of occurrences happen. Obviously, that would be attractive to us. Also, I just want to comment on your comment about your phrase was venture capital investment is robust in Minnesota. And then you went right into med tech right after that. So I think those are two quite linked. I mean, that's not generally what we've been hearing the last 6 or 7 months or so, whether at the Life Science Alley Conference or in this committee, that relative to other regions of the country, venture capital appears to be pretty thin in Minnesota. So comment on that. But moreover, mostly I'd like to hear you comment on this issue of our taking our pension and other funds, mm-hmm. moving that money to other states, and then they're coming back and enticing our firms, our small firms, away.
Can you tell she has a couple companies in it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bunce, first of all, as far as a company's moving out, I mean, this company's moving out, this company's moving in. I am not aware of, I mean, as I understand it, and I was talking to some people who were here yesterday, it was more that we had made an investment apparently in some venture capital firm that invested in something here and eventually moved the firm. They didn't move the firm because that was the only way they were going to get venture capital. They moved it because of whatever reason. I don't know, taxes, you name it. I don't know what the issue. But it wasn't because, you know, if you move, we'll give you $100 million. They just moved. And you'll hear about those, but you won't hear about the ones that moved in. You know, Minnesota, again, you talk about, you know, whether it's robust or the right word. I mean, the reality is historically, you know, Silicon Valley is huge. Route 128 was huge. And after those two, Minnesota was pretty good as far as venture capital. And there still is a major angel community up here. And there are still other venture capital funds up here. I mean, Northwest Growth Fund, which is part of Wells Fargo, is a huge venture capital organization that back in the 80s we invested with, and we are no longer allowed to because Wells Fargo decided to fund it all themselves. Okay, we're out. St. Paul Companies had this huge venture capital operation, and they decided to spin it out, and we are now investing with some of those people. There are a number of other venture capital organizations in Minnesota, and when I mean robust, I think there are probably a heck of a lot more venture capital opportunities here than there are if you go to Tampa, Florida, or Mobile, Alabama, or a lot of other places. We do have a relatively strong high-tech employment base. I mean, again, Medtronic, the St. Jude, and it's been, for the most part, medical devices. I mean, back in the old days, it was controlled data and so on and so forth. But that has evolved, and each area of the country kind of has their niche, so to speak. So, first of all, as far as us saying, you know, if you stay here, we'll give you some money, I don't think that happens. I mean, there's, at least to my knowledge, I haven't seen it happen. Now, again, that may be various municipalities or counties or cities will say, you know, you come here, we'll build your building for you. Everybody does that kind of thing, but that's not the venture capitalist kind of deal. And as far as robust, I mean, I'm just saying that I think our community, Minnesota, the Twin City community, you know, not as robust as Silicon Valley. It's not as robust as Route 128, but it's a heck of a lot more robust than a lot of other places in this country.
Mr. Vickers, there's a couple other questions, but the 20% limitation on partnerships was... Where'd that come from? I could go into, did it come at start, middle, end, and legislatively?
Mr. Chairman, it was in the initial legislation. It was actually proposed by the state board. We did it for a couple of reasons. One, if you can only do 20% of a deal and there must be four other investors, you get a lot of other due diligence. In other words, there's some other major organizations who are spending some significant amount of money under the same terms you are. We do due diligence on these deals. But we know we got at least four of the people doing the same amount of due diligence and spending at least about the same amount of money, and that's just good business practice. So, with most of these funds, we can still spend a significant amount of money. I mean, you know, these funds are now billion-dollar funds. So we can put in $200 million. And we have, versus some other organizations, but we don't consider ourselves smart enough to market time these deals. So we have been gradually investing this money over 20 years. We've continued to keep moving towards our targets. We've raised our targets over the years. Not only because you look at the market today, when you make a commitment to a venture capital firm or a private equity firm, they're going to spend that money over 2 or 3 years. So not only are they going to figure out where the market is today, but where is it going to be in 18 months and 24 months and 36 months, and I'm not smart enough to figure that out. If I was, I wouldn't be here. I'd be real rich someplace, and it'd be a heck of a lot warmer than it is right now. But anyway.
Oh, come on. It's not that bad.
So anyway, we have a dollar cost averaging long-term perspective on our deal. So that's why we, actually, from a staff standpoint and the board concurred and my investment advisory council concurred that the 20% limitation in the four of the investors was a good business practice.
You actually brought up a point, and I'm going to do a bit of a follow-up, a little different. Other states' governors have, for all intents and purposes, ordered their state board of investment to do a couple of things, invest in their state in one way or another, at a percentage or a dollar rate or whatever. Apparently, our governor has been reluctant. Is there something I'm missing other than he just doesn't want to do that? He got advice from, he probably got advice from some cheap lawyer over in the governor's office.
And Mr. Chairman and members, I mean, the governor has been very supportive of our private equity. And believe me, he asked some of the same questions you all are asking, you know, what are we doing in Minnesota and what. And I think, you know, and again, I don't mean to speak for the governor, but, you know, I think our record is pretty good. You look at some of these programs that, you know, they get a lot of publicity and they're going to do something in their state and whatever. First of all, they're smaller amounts of money than we're already doing, which we think are meet fiduciary responsibility and we've done our due diligence on instead of forcing something in some places that really don't have a good venture capital community. Is the governor interested? Is the attorney general interested? Is the rest of the board, secretary of state, they're all very much interested in this stuff. And they've been very supportive of our alternative program. And, you know, I think we can show that we've spent probably a heck of a lot more money than these quote-unquote targeted programs that are trying to do stuff, and a lot of it is PR stuff. And I know some of these people, and they have, I shouldn't say this, but, they make the splash and they don't really spend any money.
That might be a question for a different venue. Representative Winkler, did you have another question?
I do, but I've got a little wind-up first. Mr. Becker, the characterization of Minnesota as having a decent venture capital status versus Alabama is undoubtedly true. But the information that we've been getting from the newspaper and from the venture capitalists yesterday, in fact, they used the word Minnesota has become a venture capital backwater. And that sounds a whole lot more like Mississippi than it does like Silicon Valley to me. And what we also see from the reports is that the vast bulk of the VC money that we get coming in here is in one sector, and that's medical devices. And if you turn back the clock, there was a time when Minnesota was one of the five world leaders in computing technology too, and then that changed, and we were done. We're no longer a player. And so and another, I think, crucial point is that the state economist has identified the lack of R&D spending and the lack of angel and investor dollars going into new technology companies as being one of the reasons Minnesota's economy, for the first time in a generation, is falling behind the rest of the nation. So I guess I'm a lot less sanguine about the status of our angel investment community mm-hmm. in Minnesota. And I'm not here to say that you and the State Board of Investment should solve the problem. Far from that. Mm-hmm. But as policymakers, I think we're all, at least should be, a great deal more concerned about the status of that investment sector of our state economy. And the historical comparison is true, but the trend line certainly is not positive. And the trend line is what matters. So the bill, and I think, by the way, that your 20% rule is a great rule. And having to have four other people to vet this through is a great process. And you talked a lot about the amount of money that we have in funds located in Minnesota and in funds that have deals that are going on in Minnesota. But I think it's the deals that's really the crucial point. And I guess and we'll get to the bill, but the intent of the bill is simply to say, can you go out with your standard criteria, go out to the venture capital market and find four other partners and a fund manager who are willing to consider, in addition to rate of return, whether the deals are done in Minnesota. Not saying you have to, not saying that they have to be done there, but can you go out to the market and find somebody consistent with all those other criteria who would be willing to consider that as a factor? Not the location of the fund, but the location of the deals. My intent is to make this as sort of a low obligation as possible. And I'd even, from what you said before, kill the reporting aspects of that. But it seems to me that some very minimal amount of innovation in this regard, and not for PR purposes, but because of the trend line in this sector of our economy, might be at least worth trying. And I guess I'm not asking you to say whether, I guess I'd be interested, and all that's a wind-up to, the question is, would it be possible for your staff to seek a fund that would be willing to consider the location of the deals as a criteria, in addition to all the other things that you need to do consistent with your fiduciary obligation?
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Winkler, anything's possible. We have talked to various people about those kinds of things over the years. And the bottom line is, if there can be somebody who can demonstrate the ability to make money for us, and that is our first criteria, and raise the quote-unquote other 80% and get four other institutional quality investors, we're always willing to look. We have had some people who've come in over the years and talked to us. But there has been either not a real strong partnership, or they haven't been able to raise any money. And I think that's a pretty telling deal. If they can't raise, they want to do a $100 million deal, okay? You know, if you can hire a couple of good venture capitalists, two or three, get a staff together, and raise the other 80, and these other people can make it, we'll probably do that. But I don't think it's up to my staff and to myself and the board to spend our time going out and try to raise another $80 million from other organizations. I mean, we're not getting paid the money. But if somebody comes to us with a good deal and it says we're going to do the vast majority or all of most of it in Minnesota, and, you know, here's our track record, and here's we've raised them, absolutely, I have no problem with that.
Mr. Chair, to follow, as I think of this, I mean, we're not asking you to go out and do all the heavy lifting. I'm simply suggesting, at least as I see the legislation anyway, put out a classified ad, wanted, reputable venture capitalist.
Yeah,
whatever you want to do, want it. You know, venture
reputable venture capitalist. That's an actual no.
Who is willing to provide a good rate of return to this to. This one investor will find four others and will look for deals in Minnesota as a criteria of their pursuit. And if you can't find anybody answering the want ad, you can't find anybody.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lincoln, I would be very surprised if the Minnesota venture capital community wasn't already aware of that. I mean, we have had people from the Minnesota venture capital community who have come in and, you know, we've sat down with them and we have expressed our interest if you can do the rest. They haven't, to this point, been able to fill the balance. And we've had those discussions. We've had it more than once.
Mr. Vickers, what's your average investment in a fund? I mean, is it $100 million? Is it $50 million? Is it $5 million?
To be Mr. Chairman and members, we generally don't want to do anything for less than $50, usually $100 million. The exemption for that is Minnesota. We have done some smaller deals in Minnesota just because there's been some good smaller funds. We have a deal going to the board in 2 weeks for $6 million. Minnesota Venture Capital Fund.
Does that happen often?
Smaller Minnesota
deals?
Yeah, smaller. Whenever we see a deal that we like, we're more than willing to do it.
It would allay a lot of questions if at some point, so that we don't get into the same problem with the reporting with the venture capitalists, to kind of know how many of those you've done. You know, I within the parameters that you had spoke to earlier, mm-hmm. it'd be helpful for us to kind of get a feel for that.
Mr. Chairman, excuse me, but you can see on the sheet, I mean, we have a $6 million with Affinity coming up. Mm-hmm. In the bottom of the sheet, we did four with Affinity before. We did $29 million with Golder Hahn. We did $8 million with Piper. We did $30 million with Thomas McNary. I mean, you know, some of these, you can see that they are below, in many instances, our thresholds, but because they have good operations and just maybe a little smaller, but they're here, we have made a concession for those.
I can see here that you did a $500,000 one back in 1991.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you do small ones.
It's pretty small.
Yeah. Because I think that's actually, I don't know about the other committee members. I know what I've heard. And that seems to be where I get the comments. I mean, They're generally smaller VCs. They really do, they're searching around. And that certainly is problematic when you're trying to do those. The question or the statements that we've heard is that they have a problem not so much with the angel investment. They do, but it's not as big as, it's not crisis in any way, shape, or form. Where they say they have the problem is the $750,000 to $5 million deal, so to speak, because apparently, and I pipe for a living, so I have to kind of put this in the terms I can work with. Once that $5 or $6 million investment has been made in these companies, that's the second stage. They are at the stage where the East, West, and flyover land companies will come in and talk to them. But until then, they don't. And it seems like the fund that you manage with $50 million is kind of looks past those smaller dollar figures because for all the reasons that you've spoken to. And that's where I know I have my concerns. So what I'm asking is, I've made the statement, now I'm going to ask this particular question. What would you say to this committee, because this seems to be the committee that's trying to work on this VC stuff. How do we help these smaller venture capitalists kind of create the capital pool to start doing this? Because that's, in the end, Medtronic didn't start out as a $150 million company. It started out as a $1,500 company in a garage and then had, the $10,000, the $110,000, and the $1,010,000.
Mm-hmm.
We got a hole in our system here somewhere, and we're trying to figure out how to fix it. So help us out.
Mr. Chair, remember, that is a big problem. I mean, the idea to have somebody put $250,000 in investment. There aren't many venture capitalists who play there anymore because there isn't money to make. I mean, it's too much work, and they really just don't do it. A lot of, and again, I don't want to say this about everybody, but generally, the people who are trying to get those deals done are those who really don't have a lot of experience because it's one place where they can play where they quote-unquote organizations who have been around for a long time and have good track records and generally attract institutional capital, they want to spend $5, $10, $20, and $50 million. They don't want to spend $250,000 and $500,000. So you're kind of between a rock and a hard place to some degree. That's where historically angel investing has been very, very strong. And I don't take this the wrong way, but I have yet to hear a good deal who hasn't got funding. I mean, everybody, we got to show me a good idea that didn't get money. And, I from my understanding, I wasn't here yesterday, but I heard, some people here yesterday said, there aren't any deals, good deals, that didn't get funding.
Actually, it's almost a quote.
Yeah. So, And so you gotta kind of get between a rock and a hard place because there's going to be groups that are coming out saying, we need to really get into these small organizations and so on and so forth. The trouble is that, again, generally, not all the time, but generally speaking, these are organizations that don't have a track record and are having trouble raising money because of it. And I'm sitting there between a rock and a hard place again because I got a fiduciary responsibility that if I start putting $5 million in a $25 million venture capital pool with some people who have very little, if any, experience, and they do a bad job, and that money goes away.
Your name's in a headline the next time.
I'm the newspaper, and I don't like newspapers. I'm in the credit analysis business, not the credit taking business. And I've said that for a long time, and I want to stay that way. But if there are, and I'm sure, you know, again, we think one of those organizations is affiliate. I mean, again, I don't mean to. And we're putting $4 million or $6 million bucks in. That's pretty small for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've done it. We're willing to play. And if we see some other organizations that have a pool of capital and have shown the ability to do this, we're willing to play. But, you know, the problem is putting it together. You're going to always hear from people who can't raise money for various and sundry reasons. And, you know, and again, I have nothing against those people. They're hardworking people, and, you know, and I wish them the best. But, you know, we have to have some track record of some sort, whether they came out of Medtronic or St. Jude, or, you know, whether they've done a small fund of some sort before or whatever. It's tough to just say, okay, well, I'm going to be a venture capitalist now. And, you know, give me some money. Because we got all kinds of issues, fiduciary issues and whatnot. Because not only do you watch what we do as a legislature, but the retirees, believe me, they're watching really closely.
Yeah, they've been in my office too.
Yeah. So, you know, we got both sides of that equation. So, you know, again, I think we're more than willing to stand on our track record, which I think demonstrates pretty clearly that we're willing to play. And I think that we have played, and that we were willing to continue to play in this part of the market. And, you know, if people have ideas or people come to you, have them come to us.
Well, Mr. Biggers, here is what is, you know, again, what I can only tell you is what I see from this particular office building and the few times I venture out, is that, yes, the 300-person company doesn't up and move. It's the scientists or the patent holder from the University of Minnesota, mm-hmm. or, you know, wherever that patent holder may be. And they get the angel investment of to get from one person to three people. They start getting on that cusp of going to 5 to 15 people, and they actually have to go out of state to get the money. And I with all that you said, I understand where you're going to go with an answer, so I'm not actually looking for an answer. We're trying to figure out how we prevent that 5 to 15 person company from uprooting and going to West Coast, East Coast, Triangle. And again, I don't think that something that you can, in 5 minutes or mm-hmm. 5 hours, tell me or tell this committee how to fix. But I think you probably have a better grasp of it than I do. I would actually ask you to put some of that thought process to that so that we could have a conversation a little bit farther down the line. Because this is not something that's going to go away at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is an issue that comes back. I've been in this capital I've been serving 10 years now. And in the last 6 years, every year, I get a stream into my office. And, you know, I have to filter through and, you know, just as you do, just as you filter, I have to filter also. But when I get one that I fully understand and grasp and wholeheartedly believe, I have a standard rule. If I'm getting one letter, that means there's at least 10 other people out there in my district that have got the same problem. If I get one person that's telling me a story that documents the whole deal, there's 10 other people out there with a very, very similar story. And until we as a state, we as a community, and I think more the community than the state, because I don't know how much the state can get into this, figure out a way to help, to kind of get a handle on that. We're going to we're going to continue to lose really bright people that we've invested a lot of money in through education, through training, a variety of other things, other places in the country. And, you know, just like a hockey team in Minnesota, we hate to lose. And with that, I think Representative Burns, did you have a question?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It was alluded to about what the governor does. And just so everybody
he's
knows.
He's a really bright lawyer, though.
Thank you.
He's
yeah. I was a cheap one. And I was an economy for the state. They got me at a good price. In my prior job, I did work for Governor Plenty, and before I left his office, I was his number two lawyer, and I did things like help him with pardons and extraditions, but I also had a chance to staff the governor with his responsibilities on the State Board of Investment. And Mr. Vicker talked about fiduciary responsibility. I observed the governor and all members of the Board of Investment operate from that mindset, and that's very important, and I'm glad you say that today. You also talked about retirement money. Governor and other members of the board weren't investing their own money. It wasn't even really the state. Some of it was, but most of it was people's money, hard-earned retirement money. And your job is to make money, and I'm glad to hear you say that. And certainly, of course, your job is not to lose retirement money.
Yeah, that's been tough. But.
Yes. So I appreciate the board always operating from that mindset. However, I do understand, and I agree that Representative Winkler has a very good point, in that if we can do things to help grow Minnesota jobs, that's an ancillary benefit, we should certainly do that. So my question for you is, having looked at this for a number of years, what options do we have? One of them might be Section 1 of House File 3142, but there might be other things that you've looked at that we can potentially put into law to help that ancillary responsibility.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Burns, from a investment perspective, from a pension fund investment perspective, I think we've done a fair amount. You know, as far as, you know, companies moving and whatever, I mean, that's a local issue with port authorities and building buildings and, you know, all of that kind of and sundry stuff that really, you know, a lot of people move because somebody's going to build them their manufacturing plant. Or they're going to give them a tax haven. Or whatever. I mean, Minnesota's been very attractive because we have a pretty well-educated workforce. It's been a very good thing. The other reality is that in Minnesota, it's been medical devices. Okay? There are always new medical devices, and they tend to spin off of existing companies. So, you know, that is a very good source of new companies, new ideas, and whatever. But if you try to force a new kind of technology into Minnesota, it's going to be difficult because the infrastructure and the other companies are either in Boston or Silicon Valley or whatever. It's tough. Probably can be done, but it's a real tough situation. So. Now, if you're looking at expanding jobs and whatever, Representative Winkler is correct. We used to be big in computers. I mean, controlled data was a big deal. That's gone. I think what you want to do is make sure you don't lose medical devices. And, you know, as offshoots of medical devices, a lot of things can happen. You know, we've got the mail. I apparently got beat up pretty good yesterday. I didn't hear all of it.
I would just want to do a quick
and the University of Minnesota Medical School. And, you know, look, there are a lot of ways to kind of work all that stuff together, but you got to get all the players at the table and figure something out. It's way beyond me. I mean, that's not what I do for a living.
I have a follow-up question. And I appreciate your statement of all things being equal, you're going to invest in the Minnesota company. And I don't know the answer to this question, but does it make sense then that we as a legislature value that philosophy, and we should put that into law at least?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Burns, I mean, if you want to do that, that's fine, but I don't know how you quantify all things being equal. It's a pretty tough situation, but, I think we might have, no offense, but some lawyers working full time and trying to figure out what that really means if you put it in law.
I've got President Norton and President Pepin, and then we're going to cut it off because we've got to get the bill done yet today. So, President Norton.
I'll just make a quick comment. Following up, yesterday, Mayo and University of Minnesota did take considerable hits, and you also mentioned not forcing a change. And yet this state, prior to my service and most of the service of the people on this board, though not all, were around when the governor did make a choice in this state to move the bioscience industry and the genomics industry. So that ship has sailed. We have invested in the state in the biobusiness industry, and I guess rather than criticize the Mayo in the U of M, I'm looking for ideas about how do we make the investment we've already made and will continue to make, because we stepped into this arena, how do we make it better, and what can we do to get businesses started, entrepreneurship, businesses, you know, spinning off, and how do we get them the capital that they need to do it. So just a comment. We did take some hits yesterday and today, and I just want to clarify, you know, that ship has sailed. We did it. Now we need to make it work, and I'm looking for ideas in this committee as to how to make the best of that situation.
Mr. Biggers, if I might, you should have been around a few years back when the hits were really getting thrown around this place. You thought that was tough yesterday. Representative Pepin.
And for full disclosure, Mr. Chair, I am from Rochester, so I can spend in my area.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Bicker, and this perhaps is a question for Representative Winkler when he presents his bill, but I'm wondering, do other states bank on pension funds to assist companies? Is that a process that happens in other states and other state board of investments? And if so, do we have any evidence that it hasn't hurt pension funds? And I do have a follow-up question to that, too.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I didn't hear exactly what you said there.
Well, I'm wondering if other states have similar language to the language in this bill where, in my opinion, it would essentially be banking on pension funds to assist companies. So sort of using that money to, and so I guess my question is, do you know of other states that would have some type of situation like that? And I don't know, I'm concerned about the risk this would be to pensioners, of course, so that's where I'm getting at this question.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Pepin, there are a couple of what you would call local venture capital pools. A couple of states have put these in, and what they're saying, and the state has funded some of the money. I think they've gotten some outside money, and they have made efforts to invest within their state. Now, my contention is we've already spent more money than many of these pools are contending to do, within the board's fiduciary responsibility, and not trying to kind of force the issue. Have they been successful? Most of them are only a year or two old, so I really don't know.
Hello?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Bicker, being in the legislature for a couple of years, we've seen a lot of different state pension funds, teacher funds, things like that have suffered solvency problems. So I guess my question to you is, and I'll be very direct, is this a responsible bill? And can this seriously harm pensioners and, in effect, harm the state of Minnesota if it were passed in the law?
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Pepin, I think I made it pretty clear we think we have some issues with the reporting requirements and our ability to continue to do venture capital with those requirements. That would be problematic, I think very clearly problematic going forward, and I think Representative Wick will see that. As far as, you know, can we report on, you know, how many jobs, I think that's going to have to be, you know, if we're going to do that, yeah, I would like to think that we would do what you would want us to do after the fact without legislation, if you'd like us to do that. I think when you put stuff in statute, that venture capitalists can perceive as an inroad for whatever group wants to get inside. And it's not necessarily, you know, the newspaper or whatever, but another venture capital organization. We've actually had open data privacy requests from venture capital organizations on other venture capitals. And, you know, they get really nervous when we start doing that kind of stuff. So, again, I would have to see the final language, Mr. Chairman, Representative, but, you know, especially the some of the reporting requirements that, you know, would allow people to, the auditors and whatnot, to go in while the partnership is alive, I think would be very problematic for us.
So you use the word irresponsible, or is problematic strong enough?
Problematic is probably a better word.
Okay, thank you.
You know, I think after an hour you would have learned you're not going to put words in this guy's mouth. Mr. Pickers, I know you're a busy man with many things on your plate, so I want to express my gratitude for you coming here today. You imparted a lot of information and given us a lot to think about. I appreciate you coming down.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and again, I'd be more than willing to talk to you about these issues if you'd like in the future.
And we may figure out a way for you to talk to Representative Winkler before a little later today. So, anyhow, Representative Winkler, would you care to present your bill?
Yes, I would.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, members, I guess I would move that House File 3142 be recommended to pass and be sent to the Committee on Government Reform, Technology, and Elections. And I first would like to offer an oral amendment based on the discussion we just had, Mr. Chair, to delete Sections 2 and 3, which is essentially, as I understand the amendment, to delete the reporting requirement. And I guess we'll pursue this further. There may be something that we can do that might help get some relevant information to policymakers that doesn't eliminate the ability of the State Board of Investment to invest in venture capital whatsoever. And if there is something that we can do that's less onerous and yet still somewhat useful, we will try to find that. And government operations is a fine place to do that if needed.
Well, thank you, Representative. Having amended, I'm told by someone who knows that we have to add to this verbal amendment on page 2, line 21, scratch out 2-3-R and replace with the word is. On line 2.22, we would have to, after the first period, delete everything after the first period on line 22, and delete line 23 and line 24. So it would read, Section 1 is effective July 1st, 2008. The board's first report to the legislature under Section 1 is due January 15, 2009. Period. Okay. All those in favor, or any questions?
I do have a question.
Well, this is just on the amendment.
This is just on the amendment.
Oh. No. Okay.
All those in favor of the amendment as the author would like, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? As the bill is amended. Any questions?
Can I just...
Oh, go right ahead.
Just offer a comment. So basically we're left with Section 1 of the bill. I think I implied, if I didn't explicitly state during the discussion we just had, the intent is simply to ask the board formally to consider the location of the venture capital deal when making an investment in a particular fund. Subject to the 20% restriction, the need to find four other funds, And as drafted, it's my understanding that the numbers work out to be roughly $26 million. And so if this could be done, and if they, sometimes just by being deliberate about something, you can get a better result rather than waiting for something to come across your doorstep and looking at it at that point. So simply by trying to be deliberate about seeing if this can be done, I think something positive could happen. And with the board's existing requirements, $26 million investment by the State Board of Investment in a fund that would focus on deals in Minnesota would then leverage $100 million from other sources. And we would at least perhaps have some sense of whether that's in any way a successful venture without risking anything, because it's subject to all the standard risk analysis that the board does already. I think the commentary from Mr. Bicker was they already do this. They don't think it will make much difference. It didn't sound like they were terribly opposed to the concept. And so I guess I would encourage a favorable vote on the motion.
Thank you. Any questions, Representative Mason?
Okay. I appreciate what you're trying to do. But the first question is there anything that precludes us from getting the information without legislating it at this point in time?
Mr. Chair, I guess the getting the information about the outcomes is...
Well, basically, we're going to ask the board to report to the legislature about the compliance, whatever we're doing under what's left of your bill. I don't know. At this point, I guess, it sounds like what I'm understanding from what I was hearing is we certainly can get whatever information we need and... to encourage one more report to the legislature, I guess I have a problem with. Plus, the discussion that we've had for the last 2 days, I guess I find it really difficult forward with this. Well, I appreciate the intent, and I know we have to do something. I'm just wondering if this may not be premature until we have some discussion about all we've heard over the last 2 days, and are there better ways of doing it than the bill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mason, just to be clear, as I understand the amendment that I offered, it would eliminate the reporting, any reporting under the... No, actually, that's not true. They have to report on their compliance. So essentially, in my mind, they would have to report on any effort that they make to see if they could find that kind of fund out there that would be willing to invest more in those funds. So there is that report, basically, on the effort that they made. Which isn't a numerical report. It doesn't require running numbers. It just, you could come back and sort of give us a narrative about what happened. And if it was lousy, well, then nothing worked and we could remove it. It seems to me the only burden we're imposing is that we're asking them to ask around to see if they can do this. That doesn't sound terribly irresponsible to me, I guess, Representative Penn.
Any follow-up? No?
No, I hear what he said. Okay.
Representative Beeson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sorry, I was in and out on some other stuff today, but so maybe this is answered. But are there private equity firms, I mean, to get at this question, that, I mean, one way they could do it is, you know, private equity firms come in sometimes and say, this is going to be our target market, and Minnesota is going to be that market. And that would be the way that you would know that the majority of employees are in Minnesota. I mean, is that part of how we're getting at finding the majority of employees in Minnesota?
Mr. Chair, Representative Keeson, yes. And the idea is that we're trying to, that it's a way of describing the deals that are being done for companies that are Minnesota companies.
So, and Mr. Chair, just, I didn't ask that question very clearly. So what may be created is a private equity fund in Minnesota whose sole purpose is to invest in Minnesota companies, and then we would know that the money would be going into those jobs, as opposed to reporting back from the private equity firm?
Mr. Chair, Representative Keeson, yes.
Okay.
Right. And it may be a private equity firm headquartered in California that's only looking at Minnesota medical device firms or Boston because they have more other investors to fund the other 80% of the deals out there who are interested in it could be medical, you know, it could be med tech, medical devices. The point is that we're agnostic on everything other than just asking the question, can you find good deals in Minnesota and be deliberate about that?
Well, and Mr. Chairman, I too kind of understand where Representative Winkler is going with this, and I'm, you know, I'll vote to to move the bill on, but I think we should. I'm not sure there's not other ways we can kind of get at this rather than putting it in statute. So we should continue that discussion, I think. I mean, not here, but.
Representative Thiessen and Representative Winkler, I think if this bill passes out today between here and the next committee, that there's some discussions that have to be and some phraseology that might be good to put into the bill in the next committee.
And Mr. Chair, if I could, and whether the Pension Commission should take a look at this as well. I don't know if that's something you've thought about.
Yeah, we're trying to get a hold of Mary and see if they want to see it. Okay. Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Winkler, I appreciate what you're doing with this bill. I think it's a really good thought to do this, and I think that we certainly want to invest in our companies. And I also appreciate you removing the last two sections. And I agree with what the other two members had said about maybe wanting to talk a little bit more about this. I guess my holdup is attempt to insure, and it's not really laid out, and I'm wondering, and maybe this is a question for research, is that language we generally use, attempt to insure, because that seems sort of vague to me, and I'm wondering if that should be laid out or if that would commonly be laid out, because if my job is to attempt to insure and then I've got to comply with this, It seems like it's just really wide open, and I'm wondering if you move it through the process, it would make sense to maybe flesh that out a little bit. So either Representative Winkler...
Representative Pepin, if there is better language, we could use it, whether that would be dream or aspire or hope that one day maybe, but the idea is we don't want to impose a specific mandate about what they need to do. The idea is that by leaving it loose, you give them the discretion to do their job, which, I think... I certainly am, and I think pensioners and I think a lot of people are very confident in their ability to do their job well. We're just asking them if they can, you know, in good faith, look seriously at this and not be sort of neutral receivers of proposals, but to seek out people who are interested in a fund like this or in funds like this.
That's fine. I just find it very vague, attempt to insure. I mean, that just seems very... loose. But do you have an opinion on that, Ms. Newman, on that type of language and what we've done in the past?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, what language have been used in the past? And Mr. Chair is actually the one who passed this bill, and I think she's quite an authority on things. You could say the board must attempt to invest. That's a little more direct, but here you are possibly making it a little stronger directive by doing it that way.
Representative Thiessen.
No,
Ms. Mason?
I have one last question. If I understood what our previous visitor was saying, I mean, first of all, he said they typically will give the benefit to the Minnesota company if everything is equal. And then somewhere along the line, I guess I have the opinion that he said it's not his job to be aggressive in certain areas. And so what this is doing is trying to place them to do something that they're normally not doing. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mason, I think what he specifically said is not his job to go out and find four other willing partners. And the legislation wouldn't require him to do that. It's the same process that they use. Which is that they analyze proposals generally that are brought to them, and instead of saying, we'll treat all things being equal, we'll treat Minnesota companies a little better, which that frankly doesn't say anything at all. But rather than saying that, we're saying indicate to the market that you're interested in hearing proposals like this. Rather than, I mean, it's not a terribly challenging burden that we're putting on them with this language. And the idea that rather than just waiting passively for something to kind of float across your desk, just let the market know that you're interested.
Members, we have a couple of people that wanted to testify from the public. So if you would indulge us, we'll bring some of them down. I believe there was, Mr. Gerhart wanted to testify on this particular issue. Or someone else. I'm pretty comfortable with either one of the people in the audience. Welcome to the committee, and if you could identify yourself for the tape.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Don Gerhardt. I'm the CEO of Life Science Alley, a trade association focused on Minnesota, but moving regionally and internationally. It's very fast-growing right now, very focused on the life science growth and health in the state. So this particular issue is very dear to our hearts because we and I, literally on a weekly basis, talk to myself. I probably talk to 5 to 10 small and medium-sized or startup to medium-sized companies in the state or entrepreneurs on a weekly basis. Then we touch them, for instance, today we're teaching over 200 of them at the DoubleTree in St. Louis Park on clinical studies and FDA dealings. So that kind of thing is going on all the time. So we have a very, very close touch to the heartbeat of what is or isn't going on in the state in the life science side. And this early stage funding that we're talking about is incredibly important. We are at a tipping point. We just plain are. And so I'd like to go through just several points of information that I'd like the committee to think about, and then 3 or 4 pieces of my own experience. And I'll keep it short, but I think I can give you the kinds of things that hopefully will be impactful as you consider this bill, which we consider extremely important for paving some of the way on reviving and assuring it stays revived, a revival to the startup in intermediate-sized organization in the state. Let me just give you some data. In 2001, about 16% of the venture capital that was spent in this state by the, I'll call it the solid, the larger venture capital firms, about 16% of that money was like pre-A round, i.e. early stage. In 2007, it was 1%. So that doesn't mean there's something bad going on, but it means there's a very major change going on in where dollars are getting spent by venture capital, how it's getting spent, and again, most of those dollars in Minnesota are focused on life science or IT. They're the vast majority. As we're impacted by that, just a month ago, I spent a full day with my peers in from Ohio, Illinois, Indiana, Wisconsin, Iowa, and Michigan. All of those states have very, very constructive and innovative ways of doing the kind of funding we're talking about. So the experience that I've had here in Minnesota is, as some of you may know, we attempted out of Life Science Alley to build a venture fund. In fact, I talked to Mr. Bicker and his troops 2 or 3 times about it. And while it didn't happen, I got to learn a lot about what is needed in the state in the early stage, what needs to be done. I don't think that Minnesota can do this early stage funding that we're talking about in one fell swoop, or we cannot do it without having both sides of the aisle come together and make some things happen. So the part of that is both sides of the aisle have to come together on dealing with the State Board of Investment on how it responds and what it does. At the same time, we need to be very, very, very creative. We can't fund things the way other people are doing it, but we can take examples out of them, out of each of those states, and put pieces together that can make it happen. Because I can tell you that companies are going down. It is not correct. It is not correct that, to make the flat statement, that all good ideas get funded. Guaranteed, almost every good idea that is in round B, C, and D gets funded. Guaranteed that not every good idea gets funded. Now, not necessarily every good idea should get funded, but the healthy ones, the ones that are going to grow, the ones that are going to respond the kinds that Representative Winkler and I have talked about a number of times, those are the ones that are not getting funded very frequently, and we need to make sure that they have the best chance possible to get funded. It's going to take creativity. It's going to take across the aisle agreement. It's going to take something like this bill and more, not just from the state. Private industry's got to respond. Academia's got to respond. I wish I had been here at the battle or the discussion yesterday, because at times we start beating up ourselves, the assets that we have. We've got some incredible assets in the life sciences right now, and they are not getting early stage funding. I am there. I am there every day. It's not happening.
Thank you. Thank you. Members, are there questions for Mr. Gerhardt?
Just a quick one, Mr. Chair. Does the language that is in the bill now, which talks about venture capital businesses, is that focused enough on those early stage dollars?
It'll sound like I'm talking around it, but please let me just come at it from a diagonal. This would be part of it. Other parts of it have to be tax incentives for angel funding, because this kind of investment and angel dovetail together. You can't tell them apart sometimes as they're coming into a company. So I would say that this would be an important part of it, but it would take other pieces to make it all work.
And my question, Mr. Chair, is maybe I'm just targeted enough.
Mr. Chair, Representative Keeson, I think the answer would be that this is not a good... the statement that we had from Mr. Bicker was that the early-stage, higher-risk investments are not where the State Board of Investment thinks it should be putting its money. And this bill, I think, respects that. Now, I mean, you could argue, should 1% of a large portfolio include something that's extremely high risk and you have more bonds? I mean, that's not a decision that I'm going to make. That's for Mr. Bicker. But his statement was that that the early stage are very high risk. This doesn't target that at all. I mean, it doesn't directly do it, but we're talking about overall creating a better VC and angel investing climate in the state of Minnesota in the technology sector. So I think it's part of a package, including two of the bills we did yesterday.
Mr. Chair, I think to correct Representative Winkler, I don't think it's Mr. Bicker's decision. I think it's the State Board of Investments, which would be the constitutional officers. A follow-up?
Mr. Chair, there may be ways to, for instance, provide the kinds of information that you're talking about on the job growth in the companies, for instance. The BioBusiness Alliance, for instance, did a survey of the state and the number of jobs by business, et cetera. The Institute out of Life Science Alley, a not-for-profit, could be a source for doing that, or a couple of associations could get together if there was even just a small amount of funding to do it. We could find out how many jobs were created. Absolutely.
We can certainly take a look at that, but
it's just a suggestion.
Yeah, appreciate that. Thank you. Unless there's any other questions, I am going to ask Representative Winkler to renew his motion, and I think we're going to take a vote and try to go to session. Unless there's any other testimony.
Mr. Chair, I would renew my motion that the bill be passed and sent to the Committee on Government Operations, etc.
Having heard the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Your bill's on its way. Members?
Sure. I do oppose it.
Pardon?
I didn't speak loud enough, okay. But I do oppose it.
Okay. Members, we do not have a meeting next Tuesday planned at this particular point. Next Wednesday, we're going to hear from the BioBusiness Alliance about the renewable energy systems dynamic model and get an update on their project. So with that, meeting is adjourned. Thank you. See you next Wednesday.